Hello, and welcome to the Slow Style Home Podcast. If you don't want a cookie cutter generic home, and instead you want a beautiful, meaningful home that's layered with personality, then you are going to be so inspired by the conversations we have on this show. We talk about why the environments we create matter and how to set up our rooms to evoke specific feelings and experiences that are right for you wherever you are in your life right now. I'm Zandra, your host and creator of the Slow Style Home Framework that teaches you how to make really thoughtful and informed decisions about your home rather than chasing current trends that may not last or staying stuck with rooms you hate, feeling overwhelmed with too many choices. Right now, when you join our monthly membership, the Slow Style Society, you'll get a personalized deep dive into your vision of what a dream home looks and feels like. And together, we'll come up with a plan on how to achieve that. If that sounds pretty awesome to you, go to slowstylehome.com and click on Join the Society for all of the details. I'll tell you a little bit more about it later on. Right now, let's just jump into today's episode. Sarah Solis is an expert in creating emotionally impactful spaces. Her design approach, influenced by the wabi-sabi philosophy, embraces the concept of understated luxury and celebrates the beauty of imperfections. Sarah's goal is to design homes that make people feel something, whether it's a sense of comfort, excitement, or nostalgia. With her keen eye for texture and her understanding of how light plays a crucial role in design, Sarah creates visually captivating spaces that leave a lasting impression. At least they certainly have on me. She skillfully combines high-end elements with more affordable finds, always, though, with an appreciation for the handmade and supporting artisans. She creates a balance that evokes a sense of intimacy and personal connection to the space, and I am so excited to introduce you to her. Here's Sarah. Sarah Solis, welcome to the Slow Style Home Podcast.
Thank you. I'm so excited to speak with you, Zandra. This is going to be so much fun.
Me as well. I just am a huge fan of your work. So we're going to dive into all of it. First, tell us a little bit about, you know, how you got into this. Why are you passionate about it?
Oh, goodness. That starts pretty young. I mean,
okay.
I was pretty design obsessed. My dad was a musician and a builder. We were in Los Angeles and we lived in a few different rental houses and a few different communities.
Yeah.
And I loved going house shopping. I loved driving through neighborhoods and looking at homes. I just ate it all up.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, the bulk of my childhood was the 80s in Los Angeles. And there was a lot of design. There was like a lot of creative architecture. And my dad was working on these job sites, building these really insane houses and or modifying them in a beautiful way. And sometimes, like if I was really lucky, he'd let me skip school and come to work with him.
What a good dad.
And walk. Yes. But
I love it. No, I'm not even being facetious.
Yeah. No, this is like young interior designer fantasies. Okay.
Exactly.
I get to go to the job site at the top of Kenter Canyon or I'm going to go to the Brentwood job site. Or I get to go to Beverly Hills job site.
Right.
It was magical to me. It was completely magical to watch the phases of the project and to just be privy to these conversations. And what I learned from a very young age, it was always problem solving. So I'd say that's when the seed got.
I love that you really zeroed in on what is something very true about design, which is design is about solving problems. Design does solve problems.
Yes.
So let's fast forward to who you are today. And let's just start off by you describing for us, how would you describe your style?
This is a really good question. And I think that the best description that I've been able to come up with is I believe it is an understated luxury. Okay. I think that my aesthetic is, it's luxurious, but it's not flashy. It has to do with understanding luxury and an appreciation for craftsmanship. Mm-hmm. I would say that understated luxury is about quality materiality. It's about exceptional finishes. It's about texture, which is a huge component because it's subtle and it's very connected to the emotions because it's hitting on more than one sense.
Yeah.
I think that I certainly appreciate the finer things in life, but to me, those finer things have a lot to do with details.
Okay. Yeah.
And less super obvious things like lots of pattern or maximalism, though I appreciate that. It's not really my aesthetic. My aesthetic is more rooted in, you know, I'd say a closer to a minimalist or a wabi-sabi.
Yeah. I was in Newport, Rhode Island recently, where all of the golden age mansions are, right? The Rockefellers and the Vanderbilts and all those people. And you walk in and there's obvious, I mean, that is the epitome of luxury, right? It is, right. It screams money.
There's
an opulence. And you know it screams money, not just because of the grandeur of the entrance hall or the height of the windows or the number of rooms, but every little attention to detail. It's just over the top. However, I'm hearing when you talk about materiality and the luxury of craftsmanship, you seem to be bringing out the raw or the natural beauty of, say, marble or of a fluted wood that is, it's not that kind of opulence.
No, it's less precious.
Yes, it's the material, like you said, it's the raw materials that you're working with are so precious.
They're precious materials, but they've experienced life and we rejoice in that.
Oh, that's really wonderful.
And we honor that. So instead of treating them like they're so precious, for example, I had this client, this former client, and I remember our initial like exploratory conversations, and she had an appreciation for, you know, really beautiful furniture. And she had just gotten married and they had a teenage daughter in the mix. And she was so worried about investing in this dining room table because it was a beautiful antique. And she said, well, I remember when I was a kid and I did my homework on the dining room table and it left an impression on that surface. And my mom was furious. And I don't want impressions left on these surfaces. Like, what if something happens? And I was like,
oh,
let's reframe that.
Yeah.
I don't want to bring any negativity to this. I just think it was a learning experience. Yeah. And I said, gosh, let's reframe that because I think, God, does your mom still have that table? Because I think that's the coolest thing in the world that you did your homework on it and lived there forever.
Yeah, and yeah.
From my perspective, those are the things that like I want you to cherish in the design and in what I'm presenting to you as being like the patina of life.
Right. And, yes.
And that's what I associate and what I have learned from the wabi-sabi philosophy is just because it's broken, just because it has imperfections in social norms doesn't mean that it's not extraordinary. It actually gives it more value from our perspective.
That is so wonderfully put. There's a lot I want to ask you about that, what you just said. So let's start with the understanding, and I'm sure this is where you started as well, why the client would have said something like that. Not only was it sort of ingrained in her from childhood, but also I think that we do, when you spend a lot of money on something, you do it, you kind of elevate how precious it is, right? And you all of a sudden make it like you, that you want to put it in a locked bubble. So I get why she felt that way.
Yeah.
But I, you know, clearly that is not how you are going to be thinking about the objects that you're going to be putting in people's homes.
I want to honor what came before us. And I want that to be part of the story of people's homes. I mean, that's what I cherish about antiques. Well, I mean, the craftsmanship is exceptional. And when we find pieces, and this can be furnishings or materiality, whether it be a reclaimed fireplace mantle or beams that we've hand selected and purchased with a vendor over FaceTime in France or Belgium, where we're like, no, that stone, not that stone. Oh, wait, right. No. Can you take the camera all the way down that 16-foot beam, please? Okay. I like to see what's happening there, that burl. Or that knot, or that thing. Yes, I'm looking for that antiquated elegance.
Yes.
I'm looking for the storytelling that comes along with those pieces. And I love it to be a mix. I think that a great space and the challenges that come with making it feel personal, intimate, and the biggest one for me, emotional, is mixing things up.
So give us some concrete examples so that we can picture what you're referring to.
Okay. So that might look like beautiful salvaged Belgian blue stone tile that we've sourced and as reclaimed for the floors of say a bathroom, right? Mm-hmm. And then a more contemporary plumbing fixture for functionality, for finish, for warranty, all the things. And then it might be a contemporary craftsman's light that he's built. And, you know, the spend was on the floors, right?
Right.
And they're old.
Right.
And
right.
We had them shipped and we had it, you know.
Yeah,
and
they're worn, yeah.
Right. That might have been like the big spend. And then we may have found like substantial savings from this beautiful little handcrafted light that we found from a small shop in England.
Yeah.
And it sounds expensive, but number one, you're like actually investing in a small workroom, which I love, and a craftsperson. And it's nothing near to finding something salvaged or an antique light or maybe one of a more mainstream off the shelf lights that right. from a company that has a lot higher overhead and a lot higher markup.
Right.
So I love, that's what I mean by high low. And just because you're spending less on something, it doesn't mean that you're sacrificing quality when you go to a small crafts room. Right. A small workroom or something. It doesn't mean that you have to go to Wayfair. It doesn't mean that, or, you know, it doesn't mean that you have to go, let's put it this way. It doesn't mean that you have to go to a big box store online and purchase
a $59 light fixture.
Yes.
That is going to break and it's going to be, it's trendy. So it's going to be out of date soon. Like all of that. Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't mean you have to do any of that. It just, to me, high low means like, finding efficiencies and leaning into the areas where you really need high emotion, like to me, textural underfoot, like finding that blue stone salvage tile and the feeling that you feel underfoot when you're barefoot in the bathroom most of the time. And that texture and that patina is going to have a substantial feeling to it. And it's going to hit more than one sense, right?
Yes.
And then versus the spend on the light fixture is, oh, I'm supporting this cool workroom and I'm not dumping a bunch of money into that. I'm spending it on the floor. Those are the things that I'm thinking about when I'm looking for high low.
Again, so many questions I want to ask you. Let's keep talking about value because I know I want to get to that anyway. You've kind of already started to answer this question about how do you place value on something? So you've given us that example. Do you have any others? Like what's something that you personally own that you either spent a ton of money on and do not regret it? You love it. So it was worth it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you have anything that you do regret at this point in your life. Maybe when you were younger, you like bought something and spent more money than maybe you should have. But what's something you really value in your home right now?
Oh, yes. I had an old friend tell me once, it was in regards to art, is what it's worth to you. And it's something that has really stuck with me forever and ever. I'm very scrappy buyer. I have always been. I love finding something of value and getting it for much less.
Hunt, the diamond in the rough, of course.
Oh my gosh.
It's a high.
It feels good. So that's probably why I have a small warehouse. But that's to the benefit of my clients, obviously.
Yes, yes. You have a reason to have a small warehouse, right?
I would say, oh gosh, I thought about this. You know, some people buy in celebration of like big moments or successes, some people buy jewelry, handbags, whatever. Sure. I buy art. I buy art. I buy furniture. That's like, for me, that's success. So this is where I get to my splurge. Pierre Jeanneret, a Swiss architect, really, his reign in architecture and design was in the 50s and mid-century. And he's most notably known for his work in India in a community, Chandigarh. And he worked with Corbusier on this community. It's absolutely stunning. If you haven't seen it, studied it, or looked at what they've done there,
I'm going to find some links for the show notes page so that people know what you're talking about. Yes, keep going.
And they designed furniture for this space, and it is the Chandigarh dining chair that I invested in. So I found a set of eight of these chairs at an auction. Yeah. 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 A full set, really great patina, beautiful wear. But still the shape and the elegance of what they were intended to be is still existent. But then you still have like these like beautiful signs of life.
Yeah.
It's just a beautiful set. It was at an auction in France. And I was like, I don't even know how I'm going to get them here. Like, what am I doing? And I think I was stunned for a couple of days that I won them. And that I got them for the price that I did, that would be a very like a prideful moment for me.
Yes.
And a very special investment. And they've just arrived to my home just recently.
Oh, you're kidding. Oh my gosh. How exciting.
I think it'll be really special because of my design obsession to be able to connect with them and my family to have the experience with them. Is really cool.
Yeah, really cool. You know, regular homeowners, I think that they're hit with a price tag.
Yes.
And then they immediately feel like, I can't justify this. It's not so much that they may not have the money. I mean, there are things that are just outrageous and most, you know, 99% of the people cannot afford them. But let's just talk about something that is, you see, we were comparing it to something you can get in Crate and Barrel or West Elm. Now, no knock against them, right?
No, not at all.
Good design, affordable, all that kind of stuff. But it's more than, say, you pay at Wayfair, right?
Right.
But then you go to the next level. Mm-hmm. And you think about something like this, like you're talking about, where it's, I mean, it's not one of a kind, but it kind of is, because how are you ever going to find this again?
Yeah.
No longer being made. There's eight of them. It's in exactly the condition that you want them to be in. And I think people are afraid to pull the trigger on that. So it must go back to what you originally said about art, which is it valuable to you?
What is it worth to you?
What is it worth to you? Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. And that's what if you can allow yourself to say, oh, I can spend X amount of money, and it maybe pushes that, which it often does when we're making decisions for our home or our wardrobe.
Yeah.
and that's when it matters, like specifically when you're finding things antique or vintage, because there's a lot of value in loving it, absolutely loving it.
That feeling.
Yes.
We'll be back after a quick break.
I assume you're here because you want a one-of-a-kind, personality-filled home, right? Well, in order to have that, you need to define and develop your signature style. When you do that, you're going to understand how to mix what you already have with new things you find, focusing on who you are and what you love, putting it all together in a cohesive way. So what's stopping you? Well, let me know if this sounds about right. Not enough time, not enough money, and a lack of creativity or design knowledge, which makes you feel overwhelmed and insecure about pulling the trigger and changing things up. This is why I created the Slow Style Society, to help you take action on making your dream home a reality. It's part social club for people who like to just geek out on design, and part hands-on learning experience where you get better and better at making decor decisions for each room in your home. And for the next few weeks, I'm offering all new members an additional one-on-one style session with yours truly. So I'll take you through the lessons so you know exactly what to focus on inside the Slow Style framework, in what order, and you'll have a personalized support system from me to get you there. Go to slowstylehome.com and click on Join the Society so we can get started right away. Let's not wait for that imaginary perfect time to create your beautiful, meaningful home. Again, go to slowstylehome.com and click on Join the Society. Okay, back to the episode. Speaking of feeling, and talk a little bit more about what you said earlier about emotion in design is extremely important to you. What do you mean by that? How does that show up in your designs?
Look, whether you hate it or love it, a space should make you feel something. It should absolutely evoke emotion. Yeah. I don't like this because I feel uncomfortable. Or this, you know, you start saying like what things feel like to you. Oh, the texture of the sofa, or the pattern is just, it kind of makes me feel crowded or just claustrophobic or whatever it is. It helps you identify things. Mm-hmm. But when you feel really good and like you get that dopamine shot when you walk into a space, when it's great, it's like, I like could be here forever. This is home. It's like a lover. It's like a best friend. It feels safe. Mm-hmm. And I want to make spaces that make you feel something. Again, like I said, whether you love it or hate it, I want you feeling something. I want it conjuring up feeling.
Right.
Hopefully you love it. But
yeah,
my clients, I want them to love it. I want them to walk in and be like, hello, I am home.
I will say too, that there is that comfort that you talk about and that safety, but there's a sexiness, I would say. Yeah. To your work, how do you think, how are you making that happen?
Oh, I like to use sensual. I want it to be sensual. I have a very keen sense for balancing the masculine and feminine.
Oh, yeah. Talk about that.
Okay. So I believe that I'm attracted to both of those visual qualities. I like things with a bit more masculine lines, but I love a feminine texture that's soft and subtle and makes you want to touch it. I love a mohair and I love a velvet and I love like the shadows that the different heights of that fabric create. I love shadow lines. So I might create a detail on a piece of furniture, on a counter, around the trim of a door so that it catches a shadow and things don't feel flat. I think shadow lines create emotion. I think texture on walls create emotion.
And I would say, specifically with the shadows, you have a real knack for making the best use of sunlight, it seems like, in how it's reflected in the materials you choose. So talk a little bit about, or can you even think of an example off the top of your head?
Thank you for noticing that, because light is a huge component for my work as well. A big part of our process is we study the light in a space before making selections of any materials that we're going to use and really get an understanding of how the windows frame the exterior as well, and what is reflecting into the interior from the exterior. So for example, if there is an olive tree outside of a window that has a green silvery leaf, and it allows, because it's a really small leaf, it allows a lot of light to pass through and it creates a little bit more dapple like a little bit dappling in natural light. So, you know, my answer to that is we study the light. We study the windows. We study what we're looking at and what's being received in the room and how that's affecting the color and how that can bring out texture. So in a room that might have really low light, we might look for a little bit more like, I don't want to say brighter colors, but like maybe lean more into lighter colors and like more neutral colors. And we'll look for higher piles and higher texture, because if the light is low, then you won't be able to get as much as reflection from the net. Because if you don't have enough light, you know, you want to build more texture. So I might do a heavier plastered wall, or I might do a grass cloth that has a bit more movement to it so that you can pull more texture out of it. I might use a higher pile mohair or a nubbier linen, things that have more texture so that can be amplified. Whereas those are issues that I don't deal with when the room has a lot of natural light.
Yeah. Yeah. So which direction do you go then? Are you looking for things that will reflect?
I think you can go either way in that. There's less challenges there.
Right.
But I also think that it is an opportunity to play with color and tone a little bit more, or the need to create more shadow. When there's a lot of natural light, there's more opportunity to showcase fine detail and to create shadow with things like wall paneling or with framing, like actual like millwork.
Yeah.
So that might be baseboards or trim around doors. Or what that does is it creates, you can create texture with light play rather than with texture.
Yeah. Yeah. This is such a great conversation about the power of light, but also light as a design element. I mean, sunlight as a design element.
It's an element that a lot of people don't think about.
Oh, I don't think we talk about it hardly ever. Yeah.
So if you, in art school or from a painter's perspective, the first question is, where's the light coming from? Where's your light source? So that's one of those like base questions that we consider when we're building a room.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to switch it up a little bit here. And I want to go back to Wabi Sabi. If you could just kind of explain what that is for people that may not be familiar with the term.
It is a Japanese philosophy, and it is really honoring the patina of life. And so there are some practices in which, and forgive me, I can't think of it right now, but there's a gold work technique.
Yes. And I can't think of the name either, but when I first discovered that, it was exactly that. Like, this is a metaphor for life, this gold veining that you use to repair.
Yes.
Something. So anyway, I cut you off. You talk about it.
So I connected with Wabi Sabi because it is a philosophy. It is a way of life, of honoring what came before us. And if something breaks, to put it back together with gold.
A precious metal. Yeah.
A precious metal. And that it even becomes more beautiful with life.
Yeah, more beautiful. By the way, it's kintsugi.
Kintsugi. Thank you.
Okay. I couldn't think of it either. But I really want to put that word in our listeners' ears, because I'm also going to link that in the show notes page so people can look it up and see what we're talking about. So, right. Explain how it's just the philosophy. How does that extend to design?
Wabi Sabi in design is using primitive or pieces or materiality of antiquity and appreciating them and giving them highlight and giving them moment. It's a very quiet style, I would say, because there's a huge element of restraint. It's giving space to objects and honoring their antiquity or their primitive nature and letting them be quiet. It's not overcrowding a space. It's very minimal. And it's very clean in that regard, but it doesn't mean that it's pristine, right?
Or sterile. I mean, it is sterile.
No, it's very warm.
Because, very tactile.
Yes, it's very textural because we're working with old wood, and imperfect because we're working with old wood.
Right.
Or objects of antiquity. But what it is not is it's not precious. But I'm saying that. And I'm like, but it is precious.
Right. I guess we have to figure out how we're going to define that, just like how we were trying to define value. Yeah.
Because it's not precious in that you don't feel like you can't use it or touch it. That's the beauty of it. You want to give it more story. Or you want to add to its story because you're honoring what came before you and its life that came before you. And now you're adding to it, just like Kintsugi, when, you know, a beautiful porcelain object or some type of ceramic breaks, the Japanese technique of using a precious metal like gold to piece it back together. And yeah. I think it's a really beautiful way to see your space and your life.
Sarah, this is such a wonderful conversation. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Before we wrap up, I wanted to ask you, what's on the horizon? What are you excited about, either in the design world in general or what you're doing?
I am excited about so much.
Okay.
I think that probably my greatest passion project right now is the release of our furniture line, which is Gallery Solis. Yeah. So it's pieces that we've used in a multitude of projects, and we decided to make it available to the public. We've also curated our own textile line within that, which is
so exciting.
And velvets and mohairs. It's a pretty limited palette right now, but every color has been customized and perfected to our aesthetic. And then it's a collection of really beautiful collected pieces that I've had in that warehouse that are ready to be shared with the public and not just my clients.
Right. I love it. Well, thank you so much for spending your time with us. It's been really inspirational. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm so honored to get to spend this time with you and talk about all things design.
Yes.
Thanks so much for listening. I know your time is valuable, and I really do appreciate you spending it with me. Don't forget to grab the free 5-part audio series about the Slow Style Framework at slowstylehome.com. And please, please, please take a minute to leave a review for Slow Style Home wherever you get your podcasts. It honestly does help keep this show on the air, and your feedback is highly valuable to me. Have a great day, and I'll be back in your earbuds soon. Bye for now. Thanks so much for listening. I know your time is valuable, and I really do appreciate you spending it with me. And please, please, please take a minute to leave a review for Slow Style Home wherever you get your podcasts. It honestly does help keep this show on the air, and your feedback is highly valuable to me. Have a great day, and I'll be back in your earbuds soon. Bye for now.